You need to realize that this is work. Believe me.
Oh, I know.
Dealing with you is work. Yes.
You've been talking about wife, haven't you, sir?
Welcome to the Two Authors Podcast, an entertaining chat show hosted by best-selling mystery and thriller authors Douglas Pratt and Nicholas Harvey, in lively, humorous, and informative conversation with distinguished guests who share their thoughts and experience about forging a successful author career.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Thanks for joining myself and my shiny-domed little buddy, Douglas.
Shiny indeed. It's freshly shiny. I just kind of...
It is. It's sparkly. That's what made me think of it.
How are you doing today, Mr. Nick?
I'm doing great. Serve us up with a question. What do we got? What do we got?
Today's question is international. It is actually from Julia, or maybe that's Julia, because she's from Spain. She wants to know if one of your novels could be made into a movie, which one would you like it to be?
Ooh, that's tricky.
Whichever one they want to write a check for.
Yeah, whichever one they sign us up for. I mean, the first book in the AJ series, 12 Mile Bank, I think would be a pretty cool movie the way it plays out. Honestly, I started writing screenplays in my late 20s. I was writing, actually mid to late 20s, I was writing screenplays, which went nowhere and they were probably shit. But that's where I started, because I had this creative writing side that I wanted to do, and writing a whole novel seemed like daunting to me. So screenplays shorter, and I thought it'd be easier. So I wrote those. So I think from that, and I'm very visual about things, I see, as I'm writing, I see everything in there. And it really, my books play out in my head like a movie anyway. So I sort of see them that way. And I guess I've just spent longer, because 12 Mile Bank was the first one. I'd spent longer visualizing that. So I jumped to that naturally. But, you know, a Nora movie would be pretty darn cool too.
Nora would be pretty cool, yeah. Who would play AJ?
Keira Knightley.
Oh, very nice.
Keira Knightley does not look anything like AJ, but character-wise and the parts she can play, I think she'd make a good AJ. All right, let's get to our guest. We have a fantastic guest this week. She writes best-selling historical romance and mafia romance with strong and faithful heroes and independent kick-ass heroines. She's also a dynamic lady who does seminars, speaking engagements, presentations on most aspects of the author business. Let's meet Celeste Barkley. Celeste Barkley, thank you so much for joining us on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. Give us a quick background on how you got involved in writing and when you got published first and what have you.
So I stumbled into my authorly career. It was not an aspiration of mine. I've had previous iterations of careers leading up to this, and the most recent before that, I'd been an educator for almost 16 years. I taught literature, I taught composition, I taught history, all of the humanities. And I'd started reading romance probably in about 2013, 2014. I'd stuck with historical fiction before that. And I realized I really enjoyed it. There's a happily ever after guaranteed, even though there's twists and turns to the plots, it comes out, you know, in the end that everybody lives happily ever after. And it appealed to me. And I kind of had this idea for a book, and as part of a series, it was going to be four big Highlander brothers and their wee baby sister, who was, you know, a Spitfire. And I decided to give it a whirl. I started writing the book around July, August of 2017. School went back into session. I put it aside. January of 2018 rolls around. I decide to pull it back out, finish it up. Posted it on April 15th. I say that it's better than celebrating tax day. And then went, well, snap. Now what do I do with this? It's out there. I don't really understand what I've just done and committed, you know, like Rumpelstiltskin, my firstborn, to Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. And between books 2 and 3, I spent a lot of time learning the business. And then by book 15, a year and a half in, I said goodbye to teaching and hello, full-time authoring. And here I am.
What age did you teach?
When I taught full time, I started out as a high school teacher. And then when my children were young, I wanted to be able to be a room mom and go on field trips, do the things that my parents weren't able to do with their careers. So I substitute taught full time. There were no days where I didn't teach unless I didn't want to. And that was pre-K through 12, all subject areas.
There are no days I teach that I don't want to, which is pretty much every day, because I would never want to do that. So I got to give you props for that.
Oh, big time. You are a brave soul.
I walked into something different every day. I didn't necessarily know what I was going to get until I walked in. And then my last assignment was teaching middle schoolers who needed an extra support class in English language development. And then I became a full-time author, and I said, that's a good career, but I'm done now.
I have a follow-up question real quick. So and this is something I've actually thought about. Have you ever considered, now that you've found success as a writer and can understand how, I wouldn't say easy, but how much more attainable than it actually seems to be? I think people don't let you know how attainable that it is to become an author. Would you go back and consider doing something for the kids that had that kind of talent that Mike would hey, let's, teach you how to do a book. Yeah.
It's not that I feel like I'd have to divulge the adult content, but it's rather difficult to, sort of have the cachet of saying I'm an expert on this topic when I can't let anybody know what
That's
it
fair.
Is.
Yeah. That's fair.
So I stick with working with adults. That fills my vocational call to help with adults. I would love to work more with students and do that, but I'm just very wary because of what I do. And I do also still have one child who's in high school. So I want to be able to give him a little peace of mind.
Oh, trust me. I know. My mom taught me in fifth grade. It was horrible.
That I could not do, but, just to give him a little bit of a reprieve before mom jumps back into that sphere. Let him have that for a little bit longer, another year and a half.
So now you're touching on the subject matter of some of your books. So they're a little spicy.
A lot spicy.
A lot spicy. And you're writing historical romance. So all these different settings and what have you. And I mean, you've got from the Highlands, Vikings, pirates, you've got all kinds in different series. And you're an international lady, right? You were born overseas and moved here. So tell us a little bit about that and maybe how that, your travels and your heritage, has influenced what you chose to write.
So my mother is English. My father is Moroccan. I was born in Morocco, but we immigrated to the U.S. when I was a baby. I used to spend my summers, 6 weeks in England, 6 weeks in Morocco. Many of my winter holidays were spent traveling. Because of my mom's work, I was also able to travel. I'm an only child, so I had the privilege of being able to do that. My parents were able to take me with them to conferences and things like that. So I grew up with a very strong presence of British history in my life. I still actually have a lot of the books that my parents, fortuitously saved as part of my childhood library for my kids, back when Penguin was just Penguin.
Right.
Yeah. And what was interesting, when I started reading historical romance, I enjoyed Regency, but when I stumbled upon Highlanders, it really felt like I had found the correct niche for me as a reader. I loved the ruggedness of it. I loved the added suspense that you often get in that subgenre. And when I decided to start writing it, I realized I had to kind of relearn my history from the Scottish perspective. So, it became one of those things of, oh, those dastardly English. I'm one of those dastardly English. I have a lot more empathy for the Scots now than I did 6.5 years ago. But that international travel that I did as a child really set me up to appreciate history, to appreciate different cultures, to enjoy stepping back in time. And that's what I'm able to do when I write historical. And I stumbled upon Mafia through a historical author who's a friend of mine. She wrote in a multi-author project, and I read the book because it was hers. and thought, oh, I really like this, and started to binge read Mafia one winter break. You know, I usually give myself 2 weeks off in the summer and 2 weeks off around the holidays. I ended up giving myself 3 weeks off. And as I read more and more of these Mafia books, I realized, well, if you like swords and kilts, you'll like guns and suits. And if you like guns and suits, you'll like, you know, swords and kilts, because Mafia is medieval romance in modern day. It overlaps so much that it was a natural progression for me. So now Celeste Barkley continues to write historical, and Sabine Barkley writes medieval, and they're both me. So just different time periods, but the same feel.
Can you do a Scottish Mafia? Like, we could combine the two.
Well, I mean, that's basically writing Highlanders, you know, clan versus clan, family at the center of it. War is supposed to be man's business, but that never really sorts itself out. You know, women are always pulled in. Super independent women, you know, if you're going to survive being with a mafioso, or your husband's going to ride out on his, you know, horse, and you're left to lead the village and keep the castle running, then they're not too far apart. Not.
So you made the decision to do a different pen name when you did the Mafia. But from what you're saying, there is a pretty good crossover in your audience. But I understand why you do the different pen name for the external marketing, Amazon, that sort of thing. But are you finding through your newsletter that you're getting a lot of crossover between them?
I am, to an extent. You know, I began in historical, so a number of my historical readers have been willing to try out Mafia, even though it's not generally their thing, because they enjoy my storytelling and they know that it's still me, even though I'm writing a different time period, I'm writing under a different name. So they've been willing to come over. Some of my new contemporary readers have dabbled a little bit in historical. It takes a little bit more work to convince them to give historicals in general a try. So it's not a massive crossover, but I do feel like it's growing as Sabine's brand ages a little bit. I think Sabine's 2 and Celeste is almost 6. Talk about them as though they're human beings.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
talking about yourself in third person, I love it.
Celeste will be 6 on April 15th and Sabine will be 3 on like June 28th, something like that. I am starting to see a bit more crossover because, again, at the heart of it, it's me. I'm not a different storyteller, even if I'm writing even higher steam and higher profanity for my Mafia than I am my historicals. At the heart of it, I'm still the same person. So I'm still telling the same types of stories. It's still my voice. So yeah, people are willing to give it a go. Very lucky that way.
So I want to talk about your networking. It's when we had lunch, it blew me away. And then I started adding up and I was making some notes for this. It's, you're very involved in the online community. In fact, I think that's where maybe Nink, but then we stumbled across each other in various chat rooms, and some of them, several of them, you co-host or host. You did, as we mentioned, a stint as the president of Novelists Inc., which is a big convention and author environment community. And so that was super involved. That kind of interaction and networking, is that something that comes naturally, or is it something you decided that you should do as an author? Where did that stem from, you think?
Yes.
All of them.
I am an introverted person who has learned how to navigate an extroverted world, just like I'm a left-handed person who has learned to navigate a right-handed world. So while I am happy as a clam to spend 8 hours not talking to anybody, you know, after my hour or two of Clubhouse, I can be personable and outgoing. I was a teacher for 16 years. I have a degree in political management, among other things. So I am used to being out there. I am used to being able to interact with people. Before I was a teacher, I had a job in, you know, sales and the fitness industry. So I've had, you know, I didn't come out of the womb a teacher. I've had more than one career. And so even when I'm not necessarily feeling as outgoing as I'd like to be, I'm also European. So work is work. Nobody really gives a rat's patootie whether or not I want to do it. Like, you get on with it. So I've learned that it does take a lot of energy on my part, especially when I do things like book signings, but it's my job. My job is to not only create stories that people enjoy, but it's to sell these books. And so that means that I've got to connect with people, and I do enjoy it. It's just sometimes more work for me than others, but I do prioritize it because how else am I going to sell?
Well, so first I want to say work is work. Now I feel like I need to just hang up and go write because I feel bad. I feel like that should be like you should say that, and I can, like, whenever I stop writing, it just pops up on my screen and says work is work and get to it.
You need to realize that this is work. Believe me.
Oh, I know.
Dealing with you is work. Yes.
You've been talking about wife, haven't you, sir?
So what was your other question?
You talked about the book signings and in romance, we kind of talked briefly before we started. The book signings are huge for romance. And from the thriller side of it, there's a lot less of them. And I'm actually going to be doing the Readers Take Denver in like 2 weeks, which I'm kind of excited about. But it is, you know, I'm so curious. You do a lot of book signings, and do you find, obviously you kind of just touched on, it's not really something you enjoy, but you do it. But what about the benefits from that, from the book signings versus from marketing and selling online on Amazon and whatever? Because I've found personally, like, I could do a book signing and I sell 3 books, and I could stay home and I'm going to sell those 3 books online anyway, and I don't have to put pants on.
You know, I want to caveat this by saying that there is no one right way to do this. So if doing things in person is not your jam and you have no interest in doing that, that does not mean you're not going to succeed.
Yeah, good point.
It means that there's somewhere else that you are going to have to invest your efforts to connect, whether it's an online presence, it's using advertisement to get yourself in front of people. There's no one right way to do this. But for me, shaking hands and kissing babies works well because I have learned, you know, through my previous life experience, how to engage with different people, how to communicate with different folks, and to be able to stand at a table and be outgoing and do my shtick, basically, and adjust it depending upon the person who's coming up to me. And so for me, you know, I'm not just trying to sell my books. I'm trying to sell the brands, and the brands are me. You know, it's not an inanimate object like Hershey's candy bars or Cadbury's candy bars or Nike shoes or Adidas sweatpants. Like, the brand is me as a human being. And I want people to have brand loyalty and brand affinity for me. And this year in particular has kind of been the 2024 Goodwill Tour for Sabine Barclay, because I am trying to really actively grow that brand at an even faster rate than I did with Celeste. So getting out there, connecting with people, having them put a face to the name, having them, you know, like I said, shake hands and kiss babies kind of deal. Next year, I plan on staying home quite a bit more and recuperating.
Well, I have to say, I think I found Nick's problem, because Nick has been kissing hands and shaking babies. And I think that might be why you're not doing so well at these signings, Nick. So,
well, I mean, you have to put yourself out there at the signings. You know, if you sit at your table or you just stand at your table, you're not going to draw people. And I had to learn from watching other successful authors at signings, because my natural inclination is to sit quietly until somebody comes to me. But that's not how it generally works. And so I observed, I learned, I incorporated, I've adapted. And now I have, like I said, my shtick that I do. I look at the person and I mirror how they approach me. You know, if they approach me as somebody who's kind of on the quiet side and on the more sedate side and it's kind of scouting things out, then I take a little bit more reserved approach, especially if they tend to be a little bit older. If a reader tends to be a little bit younger, chances are they're coming for my mafia. I'm a bit bigger and a bit more exuberant. So I adapt, but it is a very conscious decision how I do things, how I interact with people, because I want them to walk away from the table, whether they've bought a book or not, saying, she was a nice person. I really enjoyed saying hi to her. And if they don't like my books, that's cool. I am not everybody's cup of tea. And in my 40s, I am more than fine with that. But maybe they'll tell somebody else. And maybe they'll mention, hey, I met this historical author. I met this mafia author. You should really check her out. And that's what it is. It's I do like to make enough to recoup whatever the investment was, but it's also the longevity of it's the tail end of the event and being front of mind for people or encouraging word of mouth to have them recommend me to other folks. It's the invisible benefits that go beyond just seeing my square report or my cash in my, you know, money bag.
Money bag. That's what I'm having a big bag, just says money bags. That way I can keep it.
So I have a spin-off question here. I actually had a lot of thoughts coming from what you just said. There is your brand and being true to your brand. Which I think is really true. But I have a question. So you do a lot of these signings. Do you find you get or do you push subscriptions to your newsletter through the signings? Because one thing I have, like he's going to Readers Take Denver and there's going to be a lot of people there with a lot of books to sell. When a reader walks around, they're going to have their genre they gravitate towards. But there is a fixed number of books they're going to, each of them's going to buy. I mean, literally, how many books are you going to carry out of there? You know, it can become expensive, especially with the special edition stuff that is prevalent these days with a lot of people, especially romance authors. So do you find that is getting newsletter subscribers a successful path at those signings?
So yes, I'm not always great about pushing my newsletter sign up right there and then. Again, that's one of those things that I kind of read the person. If they're one of those people who's kind of like tentatively looking at romance, not quite sure they want people to see them talking to a romance author, then I give them my card that has the QR codes, you know, one for Celeste, one for Sabine. It takes them to my linked tree and I can see, you know, when there's an uptick in sales that evening, I can see when there's an uptick in newsletter signups that I know is a direct consequence of that event because the number has gone up the night of or the next day. But, you know, this is going to sound so narcissistic, but I just came back from Paris. I gallivanted off to Paris for 3 days, but I was there for Rare Paris, which is a huge romance event, massive romance event. And I actually took my Kindle Scribe with me because it's one of those that has the pen that you can write on and then you can take what's been handwritten and turn it either into, you know, a saved PDF that looks like the handwriting or you can save it in text. And so I use that for my newsletter signups. It made it so easy yesterday to take that text, put it in a CSV, put it into my newsletter. And people were just also interested with the novelty of using the Scribe to sign up, things like that. So I have the LA Festival of Books coming up in 2 weeks. It's the same weekend as Readers Take Denver. And I intend to do the same thing because the transcribing and trying to read people's handwriting has always been kind of off-putting to me. Lord, I did that for enough years as a teacher trying to decipher handwriting. So now that I've found an alternative, I'm like, I'm back on for live and at the event, getting people to sign up. But I always make sure they have some way when they walk away from the table of connecting with me. And it's generally a QR code that will take them to Linktree.
So on top of that, you also do selling direct from your website, which has kind of been a big thing right now in the last year and a half.
I do a little bit, but I am with a small house, so my ebooks are not mine to sell directly because I'm also Kindle Unlimited.
So that was going to be my question for you because I am also Kindle Unlimited. I've been wanting to do a little bit with the paperbacks and see what else you can do. And I'm curious if you had some thoughts on how you manage that across the board with both being in Kindle Unlimited and doing that.
So I set up my store right after I started. So my store is like 6 years old and it's had a few different iterations. It's had more love sometimes than others. And it's, you know, kind of just sat there for the last couple of years, to be honest. I let readers know that they can order paperbacks, and I'll get a few orders trickle in here and there. But I've been in the process of revamping the Celeste website, and I'm going to update that store to just make it more aesthetically pleasing, more enticing, and starting to push those paperbacks more and more. You know, for me, when I've set the price, I have set it to include shipping. So I'm conscious of that. If it's international shipping, then I will send an extra invoice to cover that because it can get very, very pricey very quickly. But if it's domestic and I can use media mail, then I've already factored that into the price just to keep it as simple as possible, as enticing as possible. I do bundle deals on my paperbacks online as well as at events. I make sure that they can see what percent discount they're getting by buying a bundle, you know, because there's a lot of different people out there who are interested in buying online, but it boils down to some very common denominator buying behaviors. And understanding that and understanding the visual and the verbiage that's going to get them to purchase, whether it's indulge yourself and splurge and things like that, or 20% off if you buy all 5 books, that appeals to different people. You know, splurge and get 5 books, or save 20% and get 5 books. I try and make sure that that's out there for people at live events. And so I need to go back and kind of pretty up my website basically at this point. It needs some fresh air breathing into it. And I've had merch on there, and I need to breathe some new life into the merch as well, because I do think that that's important for stores. If you can kind of come up with some merchandise or swag to go along with it, even if that's not your focus, just to give it a well-rounded feel to your store.
Well, Nick does really well with his merch. He's got a cool merch store. I'm jealous.
I have lots of it, and I have a cool store. I don't sell much of it, but I have a lot of it available.
Do you drop ship it? You said you do the media mail, so I assume that's like signed, but do you ever sell without like signing it and have it drop shipped from Lulu or even KDP? You can do it from if you wanted to.
So I will do that for international orders if the person is okay with me snail mailing them a signed book plate to put into it. If they really, really want the autographed paperback, and that's why they're ordering from me and they want it directly on the page, like I said, I'll invoice them the extra shipping before it goes anywhere.
Okay, cool. We're going to get to a question that we ask all our guests, which is curious to hear the answer of, is what do you feel has been or is your author's superpower? Whether it's on the craft side, whether it's on the business side, what do you feel has been one solid strength that you have?
I mean, it's hands down my work ethic. There's just no two ways about that. I have a very long attention span, which I've come to understand joining the authorly community on Clubhouse is apparently atypical.
I lost focus in that one little sentence. So.
Yeah, I'm apparently an odd duck in even more ways than I realized. But, you know, I've had people say, Celeste, you should write a book on, you know, nonfiction on your productivity and how you do it. And it would be the shortest book. It would say, sit your ass down and get on with it, or sit your keister down and get on with it. I have a very strong internal drive to do well. I always have. And so if there's a task that needs to be done, then it's going to get done. And there's just no two ways about it. Whether I want to or not, it has to at some point be accomplished. And I have the freedom of saying, I don't really want to do it today. I might want to do it tomorrow. Maybe I'll put it off to next week, but it gets done. And, you know, when it's writing time, I enjoy it. I find writing so cathartic, and I love escaping into the worlds that I create. So from that point of view, it's not work. It's a joy to do that. But there are days where I don't necessarily want to sit down and send out a newsletter, because I'd really rather live in my imagination, because that's a great place to be. But it's still got to get done, you know? So whatever task it is that I might not be feeling that day, if that's the day it needs to get done, I could go days and weeks without writing and just be like, oh, the mood hasn't struck. Or I could sit myself down and say, the mood has struck. You're going to get on with it now.
I'm striking you with the mood
right
now.
I do like the fact that I like to eat. That's my big motivation sometime to get my ass in gear and write. So, yeah. But we have one final question for you. And I'm sure if you've listened to the show, you know about our wheel of questions. So just give it a spin. Get the sound. Yeah. So if you have the opportunity to write on any, you know, we tend to be stuck on our series that make us money, but if you could write like one purely passion project that you have, like something that you're always like, I wish I could write that, what would you write?
I'm going to, again, put in the caveat of each of my books is a passion project. I really like what I do. I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I don't feel like there's the book of my heart that I haven't yet written. That said, I would love to write, you know, sort of a crime thriller. I've had a book kind of rattling around in my head about World War II. It's MI5, not MI6. It's more the domestic intelligence than the foreign intelligence. It's based on a real person and kind of going from there. So my agent says that I pace like a thriller. And I used AutoCrit a little while ago, and a number of the chapters said that I paced like a thriller. And I'm like, but I write romance. Or if that's necessarily a good thing. But again, I guess my natural storytelling tendency, my cadence and rhythm sort of supports that. So I like a good shoot 'em up, blow 'em up kind of movie, and I like a good shoot 'em up, blow 'em up kind of books.
Well, I think it's a great plan. You should write it. I think it would be outstanding. Having chatted with you on some of the historical stuff before, I think it would be brilliant. It would prick Hannah's ears up, a friend of ours, Hannah Byron, who writes historical World War II stuff. She'd be very excited. Thank you so much for coming on and spending the time with us, Celeste, this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Isn't she a lovely lady?
She was great. Yes, she's amazing.
She's delightful. And she's seriously, her networking is amazing. She's definitely a multitasker. She's got a lot going on and she's working hard. And that brings me to a point I wanted to raise. You know, I come from a sports, motorsports background and what have you. And so but this is something I learned a while back from a really good coach in driving and stuff, is what we do as humans is we tend to work on the things we're good at, right? So it's naturally we gravitate. Because why? Because it's gratification. It feels good. The best athletes in the world have one very strong thing in common. They work very hard on the things they're not the best at. So if they're a 100-meter sprinter and they run like a freaking rocket once they get upright, but they're not good out of the blocks, then they work with their coaches much harder on coming out of the blocks than they do on the things that they have strength. You maintain the things you have strength with and you work on the things you're weak at. And I think it's key to focus on your strengths. And I hear a lot of this in the chat stuff about authors and focus on things you're good at and then let other people do the things that you're not good at. Well, that's great. But when you're a starting author, you don't have money to pay somebody to do anything. You have to do it. You have to do it all. So, and it's part of it. It's part of it. So I'm not saying stick needles in your eyeballs doing things that you absolutely detest doing, but pick and choose the things that really matter. And if one of those things that really matters is not one of your strengths, work on it. You might not end up being the best at it, but be better at it, because it's all part of the package, right?
No, I agree with that completely. I think that's so important that we do tend to do that, those little things, and we all have our strengths and weaknesses. You know, we joke all the time that you and I have a little bit different, you know, way of approaching things, but that was really what makes us work out really well together, I think. So it's the same with, you know, my wife is very much organized and I'm very much hey, we could just go do this right now. And so it's the same kind of thing. We have that balance, and you can find that balance. That doesn't mean that we can't step outside of our bounds, you know, for things such as talking in public and doing speaking engagements or the book signings. Like she says, you know, that, you know, she's not really necessarily keen on doing them, but they're part of what you do is reaching out and connecting with your fans. And I had this conversation with a lady this weekend about, she was about newsletters and how important they were to, but she's like, I don't have anything to say. I don't really know what to say. I was like, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And on newsletters, here's the key, because we hear that a lot around the industry, like, oh man, I'm not great at it. First of all, subscribe to a bunch of author newsletters. See what they put in there. It will spark ideas. We all need that. We all need that because newsletters are key. Anyway, what's exciting in your world, mister?
Exciting in my world is I believe I have just bought a book that came out today that I am stoked to read. So
what's that, Doug?
It's this fabulous book by this author. He's really good. I think his name is Harvey or something. I don't know, but yeah.
No, must be another
listeners, hobby, listeners, Relentless Summer came out today. So if you haven't bought it and you don't know how much I love Nora anyway, oh, yeah, I've actually already read it. So, and it is great. It is fabulous.
It's a fun one. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Check it out. Relentless Summer came out today. Yeah. I'm excited. The Nora series has really, really taken off. Thank you. Thank you, everybody who's supported it. So she's a fun character to write. She's a unique character. I have a ball writing those books. So yeah, it's cool. It's always exciting and a bit nerve-wracking on release day. So.
Oh, it always is. But I'm sure it is. We'll be checking your ranks here in a little bit and you'll be like all the way up there because this is a good one. So, but otherwise, check out our show notes for links and our guest information. And as well as our books, which, of course, like Relentless Summer. But go ahead and buy it today because he needs it. If you have bought it, please leave a review for it. He needs that too. So,
a nice review.
Yes. Don't be giving it. No.
Yeah, if you're thinking of reading a snarky review, then feel free to hold off.
We know who you are. We're watching you. We'll put you in a book and kill you off. So, no. Yeah, well, but you can buy exactly. Our books. You can check out our social media. Follow us. Like the show. And tell some people about it. You know, we love when people hear about it and everybody like, hey, I've been listening to your show. It's kind of a great feeling. So,
all right. Until next time, folks, be cool to each other.
And fair winds and following the seas.
You've been listening to the Two Authors Podcast with Nicholas Harvey and Douglas Pratt. Subscribe on your favorite platform for alerts on new shows coming every 2 weeks.